Okay. We are going to continue studying the tabernacle, and today we'll be spending a lot of time on the sacrifices. And just by way of review, we looked at some of the various articles associated with the tabernacle itself, and over the last couple of weeks we've been looking at that and thinking about that. And again, give you an idea of the kind of things that they did. And again, who would be doing these kind of things? Who would be associated with the service? The priest. And the priest would have served in terms of the people, the priest, and God. What would the priest have served as? Mediators or intercessors. And the tabernacle itself was seen as God's meeting place, right? And we talked about the altar. And for instance, the altar itself, a lot of the sacrifices that we'll be talking about today will have reference to the altar. That altar that was outside the tabernacle itself, out in the courtyard. But it would have been something that all the Jews who came into the Jews who came in to participate in those services would have seen. We talk about some of the worship rules and some of the priests last week. Nadab, Abihu were the sons of Aaron, Eleazar and Ithamar. They were selected to be priests. They were all sons of Aaron. And it wasn't just in order to be a priest, you had to be a Levite, but not all Levites were priests, right? Because it was through Aaron's family. And I think we talked about, too, that, and I think someone pointed out that there were definite rules that were given concerning who could handle what and who had various responsibilities to move some of those items that we talked about. Keep that in mind because, again, I believe we studied Wednesday night that some of those details of those laws will come into play later on because they will not always be followed and there will be consequences associated with the refusal to follow them. We talked about some of the undergarments and the garments themselves that God specifically specified for the high priest. God had a definite idea of what he wanted them to wear. We talked about the robe, the ephod, the breastplate itself. We even showed some pictures of what he might have looked like. Again, he might have looked like one person's idea of a priest based on the details that he had with probably a few assumptions made. And again, it would have been it would have been something to see. Again, there's some additional pictures. The two on the right, the front and back of the high priest or what could be the high priest's garments. And the one on the left would have been just a regular priest. Again, the sons of Aaron would have been wearing something like that. Something like that. All right. Today we're going to talk about sacrifices. Why is it important to get any idea about the sacrifices? Why do we need to know about that? Do we offer sacrifices physically like they did today? Like they did. Do we do that today? Does God demand that? And at that, okay, are we required to bring an animal for our sins? No, God doesn't expect that today. But what we'll see is that the idea of sacrifices, the idea of knowing the penalty associated with sin is very important. If we go back all the way, I mean, Cain and Abel offered sacrifices, didn't they? Do we know much about the instructions that were given concerning those sacrifices? Sir? Okay. Exactly. There's an inference we can make about those sacrifices. That inference is that God gave some instructions because he was pleased with one, not pleased with the other. And Hebrews tells us that Abel offered his by what? By faith. So there is and faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of God. So we infer from that, we imply from that, that there were some series of instructions given. We don't know what they were, and we don't want to make too many speculations about that. And we see various purposes. And I'll tell you, too, I took much of what we're going to talk about today from our text, from our book, because it's organized very well. That'll help you. We're not going to talk about every detail, but we'll talk about some of the big, major details of the various sacrifices. And I printed these off so I could sit here and look at them and talk to you without looking this way and teaching. I guess you love a teacher that teaches like this. But I don't know where that print off went. Thought I stuck it in that book. Anyway, if I'd have gotten ready 15 minutes earlier, I would have had it. All right. So I'm going to have to teach like this, and I'm sorry. But the purposes included calling upon God, covenant ratification. Remember, we talked about the covenant ratification already, and ancient people often ratified covenants and agreements with a sacrifice. But there were very little details. There were burnt offerings offered early on in the patriarchal age. But there were little details concerning, you know, how they were offered or instructions. We don't know a lot about that. But when we come to the book of the Law of Moses, there are very specific instructions given regarding sacrifices. Very many different types of sacrifices, many different types of rules and laws and what animals and how it's to be offered and where the blood could be done, what was to be done with the blood associated with it. A lot of very detailed, specific rules that they were obligated to follow. Now, with that said, with some sacrifices, we can see the idea behind the sacrifice itself. A sin offering is offered for sin. But a lot of the rules and why God picked this animal versus that animal and why God said to do this with the blood and that with the blood, you can get caught up in endless speculation with that, and I don't think there's much profit in that. I think sometimes you just have to take the rule for what it is and that God expected it to be done that way and leave it at that. Sometimes we need to do that with a lot of other things in the Bible too. You know, we don't always know God's reason behind it and we don't always need to know God's reason behind it. Sometimes it's just take it for what it is and do it. That's the attitude we need to have. So, we've already talked about a little bit. Why do we need to study? Well, for one, because you'll get a little later on and you'll see someone offering a certain type of sacrifice, or there'll be a detail offered about a sacrifice. There's details offered about the sons of Eli, some things they were doing with regard to the sacrifices, that if you didn't know anything about the sacrifices in terms of what God expected, that wouldn't make any sense to you. So you need to know that just to understand the remaining Bible story. But probably the bigger idea is the association with sacrifices with atonement and the penalty that was required for sin. That is a really big idea to keep in mind when you're studying the sacrifices. You know, when they lay that animal upon that altar and they put their hands on its head, or put his hand on its head, and they would kill that animal, just the trouble that they would go to get the right type of animal, to get the animal on the sacrifice and the blood associated with it, there was a penalty associated with sin. Sin required a payment. And I think that's the idea you really need to get when we talk about sacrifices themselves. We talked about the Levites and the priest having a role in offering. The Levites were given some responsibilities concerning animals that were to be kept. That tax that we talked about was used to fund some of the sacrifices. They actually kept flocks and herds on hand for specific types of sacrifices. We see that sometimes an individual would have a reason to bring a sacrifice himself, and that would be provided by them. Now, there were rules given, even where the offerer stood, and what he was to do, the parts that were to be laid on the fire, parts to be washed, portions concerning the priest, ceremonial cleanness, or cleanliness, ceremonially speaking. Those are ideas that's interesting to notice and to study. The principles of providing of the first and best is a very important principle I think we can get from this Old Testament study. What God expected of them, that seems to be a principle that God expects of us. God expects us to put Him first. God expected them to put Him first. They weren't to bring something that was of no good. They might have had an animal that had a defect that was really of no value on the open market. And if they brought that, well, that would not be giving God what He expected. God expected the best. God also expected of the first fruits. So we can see that principle there, and that's something that it should help us in understanding what God expects of us today. Now, there were several different types of sacrifices, one of which was the burnt offering. The word that's translated into burn or burnt offering really means a going up. Again, and I don't know that. I only know what I can read, but that's what I've read. And it was to be an animal sacrifice. It includes bullocks, sheep, goats, turtle doves, pigeons, and some other clean animals. And the reason for the sacrifices really dictated what type of animals to be offered. It was to be a male without defect. Everything associated with this sacrifice was to be burnt up, burnt offering. So that word goes with it and makes sense. When you remember burnt offering, remember, everything was burnt with the exception of the hide, and that was actually given to the priest. This was associated with complete dedication to God and atonement. There was a sense of atonement associated with this sin. Sometimes we'll see, too, that these sacrifices would have been combined with one another, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So, most of us have the idea about a burnt offering and what was to be expected about a burnt offering. And I realize today is really going to be details. We're not going to study really any chronology today. It's not going to really be a historical Bible story in the sense that we usually expect in a study like this. But again, if you have a point to make, by all means bring it up. I don't mean to be doing all the talking. Continuing on with the idea of the burnt offer. The offer would actually lay his, I think I said hands there, I should have meant hand, on the animal's head. Get the idea here that the animal is going to be standing in place of the offerer. And that's also associated sin offering. The offerer actually killed and skinned the animal. And again, it's associated with complete dedication to God. This is something you're devoted to God. You're dedicated to God when you offer this. And they would actually burn this up, and I believe the fire was to be kept going all night, and they would actually take the ashes from this offering, take it outside the camp to what was considered to be a clean place, and take it there. And there were additional rules when the priests were offering a burnt offering on behalf of the congregation, but none of the burnt offering was to be eaten. That was something that God did not want them doing, nothing to be eaten. Any comment on the burnt offering? Is there something associated with burnt offering that you feel like needs to be brought out in our study? We're hitting the high points, and there's a lot of specific details that we could go into that would be of value, but again, the purposes of our study is really not going to, we're not going to be able to do that in our study. Now, meal offering. King James Bible refers to this as the meat offering. It really wasn't associated with an animal flesh. It was associated with something grown or a vegetable type of offering. It was usually offered with other sacrifices. It was required when animal sacrifices were given, so it would accompany these burnt offerings often. It also included drink offerings. And it would offer, I said meal, it was something grown because that would have been meal or flour. Maybe not necessarily a vegetable, but a flour. He would actually take some of the flour, and it would be placed and burn up. That would have been something that would have considered to be a memorial to the Lord. They would take part of that offering and offer it that way. There were certain ingredients that were included or prohibited, depending on the type of meal offering that it was. Except for the part that was burned or given to God, the remainder was actually given to the priest on most occasions. And there were additional regulations when offered by the priest himself. So again, we have two so far, burnt offering and a meal offering or a meat offering. But again, don't confuse meat with animal if you're using the King James Version. Any comment? We're rolling right through these slides. A peace offering. When you hear the word peace in Hebrew, what do you think of? What's that word you hear? You hear it on TV. Shalom. You see anything similar to that word right there? Very similar words. Shalom. And I don't know if that's the right pronunciation or not. But there is an association with the Hebrew, of this Hebrew word, with shalom or peace. Well, this was offered to obtain or to signify peace with God. The offer was, he had obtained peace with God and he was going to bring it as an indication of that. Or he was wanting peace with God and he's bringing it. It was often combined with other sacrifices, but when it was, and we'll talk about the sin offering in a minute, but the sin offering would be offered first, then the burnt offering, then the peace offering. You think about that order. let's say you've committed some sin, some trespass, and you want atonement for that. And you go and you offer that. And this is an effort on your part to obtain atonement for that sin. Well, that would be followed by the burnt offering, that is a complete dedication to God. And then followed by that with the peace offering, that is, you found peace with God. Again, that would be sort of a line of thought there that you might follow in doing that. There were actually three types of peace offerings. We'll talk about those, two of which we'll combine in our study. The thanksgiving, the vow, and the freewill offering were all peace offerings. Again, later on in the Bible story, you will see occasionally some of these offerings referenced. The free will and the vow peace offering. It was an animal offering. It could have been a sheep or goats, or it could have been a male or female. Sometimes there's a specific rule saying it has to be a male. This time it could be male or female. And the offerer would lay his hand on the animal and kill it. The priest would actually sprinkle some of the blood on the altar. We were associated, again, that's another principle to keep in mind. The offerer would actually take the fat from the abdomen and the breast or the brisket, and that would be given to the Lord. And this would be something that was called a wave offering. If I understand this right, and some of you may correct me, they would actually take that portion that was dedicated to the Lord, wave it toward the altar and back. It would be a sense of, there's an idea here of waving it toward the altar, giving it to God, and bringing it back as if God is allowing it to come back to be used. And the priest would have been given that portion. The portion. Keep in mind, too, the priest would have received their sustenance from participating in these services to some large degree. They would have been given a portion to live off of. And there were parts left after burning. And I don't know what I was thinking there. I don't remember the specific thing there. A heave offering was a part of the thigh or the right leg ham lifted. That is, it would have been on the altar and it would have been lifted or heaved back. So when you hear about a wave offering or a heave offering, that's the idea there. And I think maybe that's what the point I was about to get across right here. Parts left after burning were eaten by the offerer and their family. So in this case, the offerer actually was able to receive some of this, right? Provided they were ceremonially clean. They had to be clean in a clean state, ceremonially or spiritually speaking. And it could actually be kept and eaten the next day, but not the third day. And I don't know all the reasons for that, and I don't think anybody does. Maybe somebody does, but I don't know what they are. But that was God's law here. The thanksgiving offering really was similar to the other offering, but in this case it was accompanied by unleavened cakes and oil, and wafers that were rubbed with oil and unleavened bread. And these parts were left after burning, or any parts that were left after burning were eaten by the offerer and his family, again, provided they were clean. One piece of each kind of bread was given to the Lord. But in this case, the offerer could eat of it, but it had to be eaten the same day. Now, sin and trespass offerings, I think, is another type to really keep in mind. What was the purpose of a sin offering? Without looking. Purpose of a sin offering. Atonement. Atonement. Shedding of the animal's blood and the death signified a penalty for sin. When this is a person who has done something they know is wrong and they want atonement from God. Now let me ask you this. Does that demand a certain amount of spirituality on the part of the person to recognize, I've done wrong? Could have been something that was very private to this person, but they would realize, I've done wrong, I need to make atonement for that. And I think we talked about this the other night. I think you would probably see a wide range of individuals in terms of their spirituality. You would have some who took this very serious, and if they knew they committed a sin, they would be one who would want to take care of that immediately or as quick as they could. But another individual may not take things so serious, and they may not care. We're talking about, how many people are we talking about here? general estimate, 1 million people. Think about it. 1 million people. And all of these people, in a sense, are to be served by this little area. What was the area of the courtyard? 175 by 150? I couldn't remember myself. I know we got it on the charts. 75 by 150. That little bitty spot, little bitty area, served all these people. So do you think probably there was a difference in terms of who's serious about their religion versus who's not? And yet, God was there present among them, and they had seen incredible things. And yet, we can see later on in the Bible story, they weren't very serious, some of them, because they complained and murmured, didn't like how things were going, they doubted God. And unfortunately, that's the problem with us sometimes. We fall prey to those kind of things. So let's talk about the sin offering. It set forth God's conditions for appeasement. Now let's talk about this idea here too. Did they have a sense of forgiveness under the old law? A sense of forgiveness. I think absolutely they did. There was a sense of forgiveness given. Was it complete until Jesus came? It would not have been complete, really, in a sense. Their appeasement or their atonement for sin looked forward to the ultimate sacrifice. The book of Hebrews tells us that. There was a sense in which sins were rolled forward. But they did have a sense of forgiveness. Sometimes I'm afraid in an effort to make sure we're careful about teaching the right thing, sometimes we forget the idea that they really did have a sense of forgiveness. And they did. But it was dependent upon Christ's ultimate sacrifice, as the Hebrew writer tells us. The four categories, there were of trespass offerings, there was the priest, and it possibly could have been just the high priest, because there was a specific time, we'll talk about that in a minute, where he has to offer this. There is the sin offering for the congregation, there is the sin offering for the ruler, and there was the sin offering for just the common person that didn't fit into the other categories. Now let's keep going. For the priest, young bullock without blemish, and he would put his hand on its head. The blood would be sprinkled before the tabernacle veil, and some would have been rubbed on the altar of incense. So what does that say about that blood? Where is it taken? Inside. It's actually taken inside the tabernacle. The remaining blood would be poured out at the base of the altar of burnt offering. Where is that at? Outside. So they would have had to collect some of that blood or take some of that blood, rub it on the horns of the altar of incense, sprinkle it before the veil, but then they would pour out the rest before the altar of burnt offering. And you think about that again. Was there a lot of blood associated with these? This would have been a very bloody business. And I don't mean to make, I'm not making fun of it, it just is. Just think about that, of how that would have, just the logistics of that and how they did this, that would have been associated with it. It was specifically required on the Day of Atonement. Why would it be required on the Day of Atonement? Okay, it was to atone for the priest's sin first. Okay, before he offered on the behalf of the people, he would actually atone for his own sin. Specifically needed on the Day of Atonement. But it would be otherwise as needed as well. And that's a good point. The shedding of blood would have been, and just the animal's death and the blood that it shed, and the association with that with a penalty for sin. The Hebrews probably, and Freddie points out, the Hebrews probably had a better feel for that than sometimes we do if we don't think like we should. There is a price to be paid for sin. Sin is not something to be taken lightly. And I think if we don't get any other lesson out of this, when we live in our lives in direct obstinance and directly against God, or not caring about what God really says, we are ignoring a very terrible price that's paid. In this sense, they saw it on the part of an animal that was shed and the blood that was shed. Shedding of blood. How is it on our part demanded? I mean, are we deserving of it? You know, we could be that animal. That could be us laying on that altar and somebody cutting our throat and bleeding because we are guilty before God. But who ultimately did that for us? Christ. And that's the principle we really need to get across. And the Hebrew writer does a good job of that, of associating those principles with us and helping us understand that Christ gave Himself as a sacrifice. And it was a terrible price to pay. Again, because we are sinners. We are sinners. And that's the thing we need to get out of this. And not just that, just the whole... This wasn't just something you just decided, I would think, that was done real quickly. I mean, I think there would have to have been some preparation associated with it. I mean, these people had, to some degree, lives. I mean, I know God took care of them, and they probably didn't have secular jobs like we did because they were traveling. But they had things to do and responsibilities. And yet, just the logistics of getting the animal there and making the preparation and so forth, that took some time. That took some effort. When a priest was offering on the behalf of the congregation, it was very similar. In this case, the elders that would have been representing the people would come, and they would lay their hands on the animal's head. There were specific times in which this was offered. On the new moons, which I believe would have been the first of the month, wouldn't it, for new moons? A feast of unleavened bread, that would have been offered each day. The feast of weeks, first day of the seventh month, the Day of Atonement, would also be offered that day. Feast of Tabernacles, each day on the Feast of Tabernacles. And any time the congregation as a whole was guilty of a trespass. Think about the number of animals it would have required just to have on hand. I mean, is it kind of good that the Jews were shepherds? You know, they needed to be shepherds. They needed to be animal keepers because if they didn't, they were not going to be able to accomplish all these things. And maybe God's providence through the years saw to it that they were able to meet that, to be that way. Yeah, there would have been a decision made when you brought an animal to be offered. It would have been the best, no blemish, no problem. I think we see later on, after a period of time, that we see a problem with the people. And I can't. Is it Malachi? I was going to say Micah, but it was Malachi, which God actually chastised them for not bringing the best. They were bringing whatever. They didn't care. Thank you. The sin offering for the ruler was to be a male goat without blemish. And again, the ruler would put his hand on the animal's head. In this case, the blood was not brought into the tabernacle. It would have been smeared on the horns of the altar itself. And the blood would have been poured out at the base of the altar of the burnt offering. Again, more blood at the altar. It was similar to other sin offerings, but there was no specific time that we can see required for it. So, the actual ruler of the people, did they have a ruler at this point? Is a physical king at this point? No. I mean, Moses would have been a ruler in a sense, but they wouldn't have not have had a king. And then the sin offering for an individual. This would have been a female goat or a lamb. And again, the blood would not be brought into the tabernacle, but it would have been smeared on the horns, poured out the base of the altar again. The priests were given a portion of this offering. And it was similar to other sin offerings. Again, the details, it was very similar to what we see. And there's no specific time required. So this would have been a sin offering on the part of an individual. So you see four classes of offerings. You see actually four sin offerings given. There was a special kind of sin offering that was offered in certain situations called a trespass offering. And there were additional notes that I want you to keep in mind. There were various times that it was required. The Day of Atonement we've already talked about. There would be sacrifices for sins of omission. But there was not a sacrifice for willful, deliberate sins, at least from what I have read. And the idea of a restitution being offered on the part of one, there would have been a sacrifice associated with that as well. It had to be taken to the tabernacle. When you made an offering, it had to be taken to the tabernacle. There would be nothing that could be blemished, nothing that had a spot on it, or nothing that had something that a shepherd or a person who was in the business of looking at this animal would have considered to be a blemish or a fault. No animal less than 8 days old could be used. Nothing could be obtained from a foreigner. And the mother and the offspring could not be offered on the same day. Again, I don't know all the reasons behind all of this. I can speculate, which would be, again, no real profit to speculate. And you could not eat the fat or blood. That principle regarding the blood will be something that continues on, even today. The New Testament prohibits us from eating blood. And sometimes you even see people, particularly in some other countries, will actually drink blood or mix blood into types of recipes. And what I understand of the Bible, we're not to do that, even today. And what did God say specifically about the blood? The life is in the blood. There was something special to God associated with blood. That is what gives life. And that's probably why I think the shedding of blood, that penalty that was given, you're taking that life, was associated with the shedding of blood, a remission. The first fruits were to be offered. The tithe law, where they were to give a tenth of their profits. There would be some cases where the priest actually provided, and I'm just like I've forgotten. I was getting tired and it was getting late, and I probably copied a slide and didn't take out all the details here. I think that's the last slide. Do you get a sense for sacrifices? Again, we're just spending one class. Bernie, did you have a point? That's a good point. I'm really glad you brought it. I hope everybody heard it. I'll try to summarize just so that we capture on our recording and for those who might not have heard. Bernie points out that not everybody would have been shepherds. And that if you were a shepherd, you would have to go and actually purchase an animal for the purpose of a sacrifice. And if you didn't have that money or to buy a perfect sacrifice, a perfect animal, that would have been of some expense to you. And there would have been a sacrifice in that sense as well. And there were even provisions made, and I forgot to point that out, I'm glad you did, for those who would have been impoverished or poor who could not make that payment, God would have made provisions for them to use something else. So very good point to remember there as well. What are your other comments? We're getting close, I think, to the end of class, aren't we? What time do we usually stop class? 17 years, and I still don't know that here. A couple minutes. I'm going to go ahead and stop here unless there's another comment. I appreciate your comments, and I do understand the nature of this class. It's more details, and again, it's not. There could be a sense in which it is not as interesting to us because we like stories and we like chronology, and I'm certainly in the same way. But we need this. And when you come to the New Testament and understand the idea of sacrifice and shedding of blood, It was all based on an understanding of this and the principles set forth here. Thank you for your comments.